Welcome, Mr. Michael Pachter, to the show. Welcome. How are you?
Thank you, Vigor. Good.
First of all, how are you in California? How's things with the COVID-19 and all of that?
You know, we have a lot of stupid people, but apparently we have fewer stupid people than many other states in the U.S., so we're doing okay. I think the problem with America and Americans in general is that we are fiercely proud and protective of our rights because the government tends to allow people to do what they want to do. And I think that the stupid people have a problem drawing a line between exercising your rights and harming others. So, you know, they seem to think that it's okay to carry guns and, you know, obviously it's legal. But they don't seem to get upset when someone uses those guns to kill others. It's okay to have free speech, which obviously is written into our Constitution, but they don't think it's okay. I'm sorry, they don't get upset when people use that speech to harm others, you know, and I think that COVID has kind of trampled on free speech rights because the restrictions that were put in place, you know, you can't go where you want and you have to wear a mask when you do it. Americans seem to think, oh my God, wearing a mask is trampling on my rights to express myself. It's just not, you know, it's like requiring wearing a seatbelt when you drive in your car.
Exactly.
You know, it's safe and it's protecting your life. And, you know, it's having a speed limit. It's protecting your life. You can't drive 100 miles an hour down a residential street. So, you know, I think that we just have a lot of stupid people who don't understand and who think that free speech means they can do whatever they want, whenever they want, no matter the consequences. So the pockets of outbreak have been, you know, the places where there are more dumb people, and in particular, the ones that have the dumbest leaders. California is our biggest state by a lot. And we have, you know, 40 million people. I think the next biggest is 25. So we're the biggest state, and we have pockets of stupidity. There's one about 5 miles from where I live. I'm at the extreme southern end of Los Angeles County, and LA is pretty good, but Orange County is pretty stupid. So they're right next door. So, you know, we've had our pockets, but we're actually doing well, like not very many people dying. I mean, we're down to, as a state, 25 or 30 deaths a day, which is really, yeah. I mean, nothing's good, but it's much better than it was. We were in the hundreds, you know, before. So the curve is flattening. We are ripping on vaccinations.
Yeah.
My 21-year-old daughters have each gotten their first shot. So they're down to everybody. Actually today is April 19th. Today it's open to all ages. It's everybody. So people, you know, we're at 50% of adults vaccinated, and that number is probably higher in California. And our ongoing problem is going to be, people who think it's their free speech right not to get vaccinated. And in fairness, it is. I mean, you can't force somebody to get vaccinated. So I expect that after most of the intelligent people are vaccinated, we're going to have another resurgence of sickness and death among the people who refuse because they think that God will protect them. But anyway, that's where we are. Well, I would imagine that we're not a lot different than other countries. I mean, we're wealthier than a lot. So we can afford to like the vaccines are free, you know, so we can afford to distribute and pay for them. But we're also more stupidly independent than most. So we'll probably have a third wave of infection among the people who don't get vaccinated. And I'm hopeful that, you know, that the remaining people get scared into getting vaccinated because it seems like it works. It's pretty impressive when you see the numbers. So I'm vaccinated, hence my short hair.
Yeah, we're doing quite well here as well. I think we've had 3 cases where I live in total since last year.
So oh, wow.
Yeah. Like Norwegians, we kind of follow the rules. We kind of, yeah. And there's a thing that we do here in Norway. In Norway, we don't really get close to other people before COVID. And so, like, nothing's really changed for us, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you're not an island, but you're kind of structured like an island where, you know, it's hard to get there. I mean, you either fly or you take a boat. I mean, I guess theoretically you could drive from Finland or something, but you know, really the mainland Russia driving to Norway is impossible. you know, so the point is, you're really not getting there unless you fly or come in by boat. And so you guys can control the influx. And you do have a ban on travel, right? You're not letting Americans in there.
For the most part, no. Right. Like, we don't really, yeah.
Right. Yeah, we just don't do that. That's the problem. We allow anybody in, and we have some quarantine rules. But, you know, I have a friend who very super smart, not a jerk at all. But she went to Atlanta to for work. She had a work event there, and she tested before she got in the plane. No COVID, and she got there and she had COVID. And so, you know, she clearly was infected. And it didn't show up, and we don't know where she got it, but. So the rule in Georgia was 14 days in a quarantine in a hotel. So yeah. She rented a car and drove home, but the, you know, she missed the work project. She couldn't work on it anyway. So she just came home. But, you know, that's the problem. It's like, she's safe. You wouldn't expect her to be sick, but I'm, you know, sure she got it from neighbor or kid or something. I'm sad.
Yeah. But we're kind of lucky here because we live in the northern half of the country. And there's always 5,000
really, you're isolated. Yeah. You're isolated. Yeah.
So. Kind of lucky that way.
What was that movie, Ex Machina? Was that filmed? Is that Norway or is that Sweden? No, that might have been Sweden.
Yeah. Hoth, have you seen it? From Star Wars, which was actually filmed in Norway. But yeah, I haven't seen Ex Machina.
Yeah. Oh, the whatever those big giant crawlers were called. Were they called crawlers? Imperial walkers. Walkers.
Yeah. AT-ATs.
Yeah.
getting back to you for a second. You work for Wedbush Securities. What do you do there? For the people that don't know, who are you?
Okay, so the way that our all markets are organized, people invest in stocks, and investing in stocks just means you own a small percentage of a publicly traded corporation. So you can buy stock in Microsoft or Nokia or you know, Volvo or General Motors or Tesla. And because there are so many stocks, the professional investor class, which we call institutional investors, those guys are not equipped to understand every single company because they're responsible for 10 or 12,000 different securities. So there are specialists like me, and we master the inner workings of typically 15 to 30 companies. And then we help institutional investors, professional investors make better decisions about those stocks. So I will talk to an institutional investor who might be responsible for 1,000 different stocks, you know, covers all tech or something. And so he has to know about Tesla and Microsoft and Netflix, you know, none of which have anything to do with one another. And then he decides he wants to invest in Activision or Nintendo. You just aren't going to learn anything from Tesla that helps you understand Nintendo. So, you know, he can't be an expert on electric vehicles and enterprise software and streaming video. So he's certainly not going to be an expert on video games. And so I help them to understand how Activision makes money and what they're likely to earn. And at the end of the day, with a few exceptions, share prices are just a function of earnings power. So if a company, you know, if Activision makes $3 one year and $4 the next year, the stock will go up. And if they make $4 one year and $3 the next year, the stock will go down. I say with some exceptions, like GameStop doesn't trade based on its earnings power, and Tesla doesn't either. Netflix doesn't either. But for the most part, people care about earnings, and I'm pretty good at forecasting earnings. That's what I do.
So you cover a lot of video game companies then?
Yeah, I cover all the Western ones. I don't cover, except for Nintendo, I don't cover any Asian ones. The Asian ones, it depends on the company, obviously, but they tend to generate most of their revenue locally. So Tencent and the Japanese companies, Capcom, make less money here, and they don't really trade here, so it just doesn't make sense to cover them. But the Western companies and plus Nintendo make the bulk of their profit in Europe and US, so it's easier to understand the market.
Yeah, because I've been following you for a long time, and First, I just want to ask you how you got into the things you are. Like, how did you become a stock market analyst, if that's the term for it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, stock market analyst is good enough. I was a lawyer, and I specialized in tax. So I was what's called a transactional tax lawyer. So I'd work on business combinations, on mergers and acquisitions, and minimize taxes from that. That was my job. And I decided to go back to school and get a business degree. So I got an MBA at UCLA and moved from being the tax lawyer to being the business person on the mergers teams. So I did mergers and acquisitions as the person in charge of the deal for many years. And then I moved into investment banking for a very brief period of time, just, you know, putting companies together and charging 2% of the transaction value, which is very lucrative. And then I ended up getting hired to work at Wedbush to run their research department. And that was almost 22 years ago. And I just had a varied background. So I built the research department and then decided it was fun being an analyst. And I had played video games. This was literally 1999, you know, so I had played video games and owned a PS1. And had owned an NES and a Super NES and an Atari 2600 and a Sega Dreamcast. And so it just felt like, was it Dreamcast or Genesis? Whichever the one was before, Genesis, yeah. And then a Dreamcast. And it just felt like, you know, something. I played games and what the heck, I'd cover the stock. So I picked them up 20 years ago and haven't looked back.
Well, so that's a happy coincidence then, you actually being able to work with video games while being a gamer as well.
You know, I think that, you know, the people who cover oil tend to have worked in the oil industry, and people who cover semiconductors worked in the semiconductor industry. So it's not that uncommon. But playing the games doesn't qualify you to, it's like saying I like movies and I watch movies in the theater, so I'm going to cover Disney. It just doesn't work that way. Understanding the games is probably 2% of the job. Understanding how they're made, so understanding the developers, that's far more important, and understanding the cost of the games. And, you know, like I cover Unity, and probably my big advantage in Unity, and I mean this sincerely, is I play mobile games, and I understand exactly how mobile games are delivered in mobile games. I watch them. I click through frequently. I have installed games. You know, I've spent money in games. So when Unity talks about its Create business, which is 2/3 of their revenue, I'm pretty confident I'm the only person who covers Unity who actually knows what goes on there. And, you know, again, my competitors can read about it, but if you don't play a game, if you haven't participated in a tournament inside a mobile game, you don't really understand what Unity is creating or helping developers create to help them monetize the game. You don't understand why people spend money. So you've got to spend money in these games to get why people do it. And I remember back when mobile started, most investors thought it was the dumbest thing ever. Why would anybody pay in a free-to-play game? You know, and that's like saying, well, if you have television, why do you go to the movies? Because TV is free. Why would you ever pay money to see a movie? It's just a different experience, and you'll pay if you like it. And the other thing that's crazy is, you know, nobody questions why people spend money at Starbucks. You know, why does, you can make coffee at home. Why do you spend money at Starbucks? What you know, no matter what Starbucks costs, it's cheaper at home. You know, it doesn't matter how low they lower the price. So, you know, to me, video games, the same thing. It's people spend money because it's fun and they're competitive and there's an item that they don't want to wait for. You know, so they pay to accelerate. So it helps me understand the games. And I probably play far more mobile now than anything else. There's not much more to learn in console.
Yeah, you've talked a lot about your love for Clash of Clans, for instance. Do you still play it?
I don't. I was in a clan, boy, what's that game, 2010? So probably in 2012 or so, 2013, I was in a clan that was 20th in the world. And we were good. And if you didn't spend money, the clan couldn't keep up. And I was one of the spenders. And I just, you know, I was into it by a lot. And I just, you know, it got to work. I didn't want to carry them. And we had plenty of guys spending money in there. It just got to be too much of a grind. And you had to show up too often together. And it was a grind. So I dropped it. No, I haven't played it. I played Clash Royale for about a month just to see what it was about, which was actually really fun. But no, I don't play Clash of Clans anymore.
And talking about mobile, what do you think of the bigger franchises coming to mobile now, like League of Legends, PUBG, Call of Duty, all of these types of games?
I think that that everybody's doing it differently, but I think Fortnite has pioneered the right concept, which is that the game is playable on multiple platforms, all in synchronous manner, so that you can play with other people. And in fairness, like Fortnite's hard enough with a mouse and a keyboard. Like I've not even tried it on mobile other than to look at it. I can't even imagine building and running and shooting on a mobile screen. I'm not sure how you do it. I can barely do it on a laptop or desktop. I suck at building and shooting. I can't do it. And I used to watch Ninja play, and he'd be like running on a platform that he was constructing as he was running and aiming down and shooting and just like amazing. And he's not the best player in the world. That's what's crazy. They're better. But I could never do that on mobile. But I think that's the right model, that you know, you can pick up the phone and do some things. And if nothing else, you know, harvest and get weapons and bullets or health or resources so that you can level up, you know, and unlock different things. And so everybody's done it a little different. The PUBG mobile game is this standalone business, you know, standalone game. So it's Call of Duty. Where Apex hasn't launched mobile yet, but I asked them and they said, no, it'll be standalone. And I think that's wrong. I think you want to integrate them all. I totally understand that the mobile game is not competitive with the PC or console game because it doesn't play as well. But I think that's the model. I think you want somebody, because I don't want to invest in Call of Duty three times. I don't want to invest in the console game and then Warzone and then mobile. And the Activision guys understand that. So at least they made things happen where if you unlock a weapon in the $60 premium game, it'll be available in Warzone. So that gives you a reason to go buy the premium game. But I think the better model is I can level up, you know, I can restore my health. You know, I think about games like even like Dragon Age, you know, like an old school game. You need to, you know, once you get injured, you need to restore your health. You need to rest. And there's other stuff to do. You can farm and you can harvest. And even like a game like Diablo, where there's like all these, you know, hunting and gathering and, you know, there's stuff you want to go out and just scavenge around. Do that on mobile, you know. So ultimately, I think they're all going to come together. And fascinating, I think, Zynga is making a Star Wars game that is Switch and mobile synchronous. So that game's going to launch Switch and mobile synchronous. Now they're making it, I understand, I haven't seen it, as a battle arena type game. So the gameplay is going to be the same when you're in a little arena, which, you know, which I guess League of Legends is like that. That would work. I could, you know, I realize that the great players still need a mouse and a keyboard, but it at least will work because everybody's got the same view and the same same area to work with. But the only reason they're not on other consoles is that EA has the rights to Xbox and PlayStation. But I think Zynga's hoping this is big and successful. And when EA's license expires, they can move their game over. And Disney won't care. Disney won't cut EA off, but they'll change it from exclusive to non-exclusive.
Do you ever think we'll get to a future then with just using your phone to play on your TV and have the same experience?
Soon. Yeah. Soon. So the constraint of a phone is the graphics card, nothing else. And the constraint of the graphics card isn't cost, it's heat, you know, heat and power consumption. So, you know, if you have your phone on a charging station, as I do with a case charger, if I could connect my phone by Bluetooth to my TV, I could use this right now because my phone has 256 gigabytes of flash. So I could play Call of Duty. You know, I don't think Call of Duty is bigger than like 50 or 60 or something. I guess maybe the new one might be bigger, but you know, I could download a big game to my phone and play it on my TV as long as the graphics card will allow me to. More likely, you're going to see an Amazon Tower, Echo Tower, that has a high-end graphics card built in, because that's plugged in all the time and can run cool because it's vented. But yeah, this is coming, and it shouldn't matter. Games should be on any device in the home and play on any device. And, you know, I don't know if you have old music CDs or downloaded files, but if you use a Sonos device, it will mix in. If you have Spotify, it'll mix in streaming music and stuff from your PC if you have songs there. My phone will mix in songs on my phone versus songs in the cloud. And so games should work the same way. That's completely doable. So I think ultimately streaming is going to look like that, but it doesn't have to be your phone. It shouldn't matter. I mean, if your PC has a 2 terabyte, you know, hard drive or flash memory, put the game on your PC. Who cares? It should still work with your television. It's going to happen. And that technology exists today. They just, nobody's bothered to do it yet. They will. Amazon's going to do it.
What about Google with their Stadia project? Or
I don't think they have any clue what they're doing, so I don't expect that they're going to win. I think that let's be fair. They started out with ambitious plans to make great content, and then they changed their minds. And, you know, there's an open question if first-party content matters for streaming. It matters for consoles, because a consumer has to make a decision to buy a console. And not because of the profit from the console, but because once you buy a PlayStation, you are a PlayStation customer and your games will be on PlayStation. Once you buy an Xbox, same thing. And so you can charge the $50 a year Xbox Live Gold membership or PlayStation Plus membership. And they also are going to sell you all your games, so they'll get 30% of everything you spent. So the decision to be a PlayStation owner matters, and you'll make that decision because you want to play Last of Us or Uncharted or Crash Bandicoot or whatever they have that's their hot game. And I think that Google and Amazon both thought we need that in order to establish our streaming services, but you don't. Like, you can have, like, that's like saying you would never join Amazon as a customer for 2-day delivery unless they had proprietary toilet paper, you know, proprietary food. You don't care. You just want to buy stuff on Amazon. So I think Amazon and Google each figured out they don't need first-party content to establish the cloud service. And so the cloud services will evolve differently. I think Google's mistake was that they started Stadia out as a subscription service, and you would never subscribe to that unless they gave you something that you couldn't get elsewhere. But if they turned it into a storefront where it's just a $60 game and you just buy the game, I don't think we care. And if you're the publisher of the game, if Google tells you we'll sell the game at a retail margin, you know, 20% instead of a internet download margin of 30, then the publisher makes 10 percentage points more and he'll be happy. So I think that'll happen. I think Google and Amazon will each offer ultimately a storefront. Amazon is far better at dealing direct to consumer than Google. And so I expect Amazon to win. I personally think Amazon management is smarter and more focused. So I expect them to win. And interestingly, I mean, Google's advantage is YouTube is actually better than Twitch. Ultimately, like, I thought when I met the Twitch guys, I remember them talking to me right when it started, you know, 2013 or something. And I was like, oh, but so this content's archived as well as live? They go, oh, no, all live all the time. And I went, well, that, so you have to tune in when it's on? Yeah. And I go, that'll never work. Now, it's worked great, but YouTube has probably 10 times the traffic. You know, and so they asked me to do a show on Twitch, actually, when I lost Pack Attack. And I said, I'll do it if it's archived. I will not do it if it's live. I'm not dependable. I can't show up every day. And they said no. YouTube never offered, but I'm sure if Shane goes away, YouTube will offer. But Yeah, I think Google's better at game content for creators. Amazon is better at direct to consumer selling stuff. So those will be the two that dominate. And Microsoft's not stupid. They're trying to be in the business too. They're just trying to do it with a subscription. So we'll see. It's going to be an interesting next 5 years, but good for consumers. You'll end up getting more content and no console. The point is, you will not have to buy a console 5 years from now, and that'd be great.
With Microsoft, obviously they have their Game Pass service, and they recently bought ZeniMax. Are they trying to position themselves for a future like the one you're describing?
No, those purchases are to support the console, and I think today Microsoft hasn't articulated this, so you know I'm just guessing. I think today they think the Xbox brand has value and they'd like to sell you a console and they'd like to sell you Xbox anywhere if you buy a console. What they have never announced is that Game Pass will work even if you don't own a console. That's never been formally announced, but it will. So if you subscribe to Game Pass and you don't buy a console, you can play on your PC. They actually have a PC standalone version and it totally works. And they'll, if you go online and look it up, you'll see that it works. But consumers don't seem to get that. And so Microsoft's hook is get you into the Xbox ecosystem. I think that this is their way of weaning consumers off the console and onto the Microsoft brand for streaming, for cloud delivery. But ultimately, they make more money if you're an Xbox customer, because once you're an Xbox, you know, like, would you pay for Xbox Live on a streaming service? Like, why? Why should you be paying them to play against other people? And that's where I think Amazon's got a big advantage. If Amazon sells you the game, Amazon's cloud infrastructure would let you play multiplayer instantly for either nothing or for less money than Xbox Live Gold. So, and cross-platform. Like honestly, if ultimately they get a game, it shouldn't matter if it's the Xbox version or the PlayStation version. If it works on Amazon, it works on Amazon. So cross-platform, you don't have to belong to a multiplayer service, or roll it into Prime. You know, maybe.
Nå det endelig helg hos Meny, og vi inviterer til pizzafest. Bak bunnen selv, kjøp ferdig på rull, eller bruk Menys ferske pizzadeig. Topp med mozzarella, enduja, slegge, råni, skinke eller en annen favoritt. Helgens tilbud 30% rabatt på et stort utvalg pizzaprodukter. I butikk eller levert hjem. Meny, spiser du bedre, lever du bedre.
Have a Prime gaming offering that's $150 instead of $119 a year or something, you know, and then share that extra $30 with the publishers, they'll get more content. So Amazon's going to end up winning this, but Microsoft's being smart about trying to sell you a console first, get you to be a convicted Xbox owner, and you want to buy all the Xbox stuff. Having Game Pass, have exclusive Bethesda content, exclusive Microsoft Game Studios content, so that you become a Game Pass member. And in the long run, if they have enough content, Game Pass is a great deal. I don't think it's a great deal. It's $15 a month. You know, it might be 10. It's hard to, it might be 10 when you're all done. $15 if you buy it monthly, but $120 a year is two games. You know, so unless you buy more than two games, you're never going to join it. And you know, unlike me, like I pay for Spotify for my family. I don't think we purchased, you know, 25 CDs in the last 10 years, but we listen to a lot of music. So they've converted me from $30 a year in CD spend to $180 a year family Spotify. But because of that, we listen to music all the time. Wherever I am, I was on a boat yesterday, I turned on Spotify. Like because I can. And obviously my kids listen to it in the car. Their cars are all integrated with their phones and they just turn Spotify on. So we consume more because the service is there. That's what I think Microsoft hopes Game Pass will be. And it might work. I just don't think it works like Spotify, because all music is archived. Like if I want to listen to a 1960s song or even a 1940s song, I can. I don't want to play a 1960s game. You know, I don't want to play. I mean, some people will. So a game's useful life, I mean, we'll see. I don't think that, you know, the original Bust a Move game is worth that much in catalog. Maybe a million people would play it, but I don't think it's got, you know, the kind of legs that an original Rolling Stone song has. You know, so Spotify is selling us something that we like to listen to now. My 21-year-old daughters love 1960s and 70s music. So, you know, but you can't name anybody now who likes 1980s or 90s video games. So, you know, it's not the same. It might evolve into it in 20 years, but right now it's not the same.
With a subscription service compared to physical games, how do publishers and developers make their money?
The standard model is that the service pays out about 2/3 of revenue for content, and they'll pay it based on consumption. So they'll have an arm's length contract with their own studios as well. So if half of all the gameplay is Bethesda and Microsoft Game Studios, then Microsoft would pay out half of the payments to themselves. And if the other half is EA or Activision or independent, they'll pay it out to them. So if you think of Game Pass, say, costing $120 a year, there's $80 in royalty payments available. If EA is 10% of all the consumption on Game Pass, they'll get $8 a year per subscriber. And there's 18 million subscribers and growing. So it's real money. I mean, you know, they could make, you know, $100 million a year quickly by putting their old catalog stuff on. But, you know, if they're not 10%, then they're not going to get that kind of royalty. Now, ultimately, it'll be like a Netflix model where there's a minimum guarantee to put the content up because nobody knows what the demand will be. And so more popular games will have higher minimum guarantees, and that's up to Microsoft if they think they can justify it. But assume 2/3 of what consumers pay is for content, and 1/3 is to cover their costs of delivering it.
Okay, interesting. You've talked about with like subscription services and stuff. You've talked about FIFA going free to play, or your wish for them to go free to play, or your recommendation, I should say. Do you see a future where we have more like these annual or biannual games like Call of Duty, Battlefield, all the sports games, obviously? Should they go free to play?
I mean, the bad thing about free to play is that over 90% of the people who play don't spend money. The good thing about free to play is between 2 and 10% of the people who play spend money. So, it's really an open question. You know, from EA's perspective, they already have 25 million people buying FIFA every year, and they're afraid if they make it free to play, those 25 million people won't spend money anymore. I think there's 1 billion people who watch FIFA, and if you make FIFA free to play, that 25 million will grow to 250 million instantly. And if the monetization is 10%, then they will double their revenue from FIFA just very quickly. And in the meantime, if you're the sport, FIFA, you have 25% of your audience who's engaged and enjoying, you know, interacting with your players and your teams year round. So that's really healthy for everybody. So ultimately, I think that's true of all free-to-play games. And, you know, I think the interesting example, the interesting case study is Activision saw Fortnite come out in 2017, and all of the Activision free-to-play games started to suffer. So Overwatch is a paywall, but there's a free-to-play element, and Heroes of the Storm and Hearthstone started to decline. And that's just because those gamers went over to the new thing, which was Fortnite. So Activision announced pretty early in 2017, we are going to develop a Battle Royale game with our Call of Duty franchise. And in fall of 18, they came out with Call of Duty Blackout, but that game was behind the premium paywall. So the only people who could even try Blackout were the 25 million people who bought whatever that year was. I don't remember, Black Ops or Modern Warfare, but World War II, whatever that Call of Duty was in 2018. So the audience total addressable market was 25 million people, as opposed to a free-to-play game, the audience is 3 billion people, you know, on mobile, on console and PC and desktop, it's a billion. It didn't work, failed. So 18 months later, they launched Call of Duty Warzone, free-to-play desktop PC, or PC console. And I remember them saying this back in February of 2020. They said, we're going to launch Warzone in March. Expect Call of Duty premium sales to be down this year. And the reason is we're giving Call of Duty away for free. And we think that if we give it away for free, we will peel off a couple of million people who would buy the premium game. And so sales will be down. Fine. But we think Warzone will do a few hundred million dollars. It'll be profitable. So in the aggregate, the brand grows, but expect the core to go down. A year later, they reported earnings and they said, imagine our surprise, Call of Duty premium sales were up 40%. And that's a game that sells 25 million units. It sold 35. And they said the reason was 10 million more people who played Warzone thought the game was so fun, they bought it. So that's the right model. So to answer your question, if you made FIFA free to play, EA's FIFA sales would go from 25 to 35 million, not down. And the other 80 million, 90 million people who played the free-to-play game would spend a ton of money in Ultimate Team. So I think that it's idiotic of EA to keep FIFA behind a paywall. They could still make the FIFA $60 game. You can still do that game. Ultimate Team, as you know, is like building teams with different configurations. But if you just wanted to play the standard FIFA teams the way you do in regular FIFA, you could absolutely do that. And they could do that with all their games. I think everybody should come up with an integrated free-to-play. And again, Activision did Warzone standalone in front of the paywall. That led to bigger sales. I still think the best version is everything works cross-platform. But if you have a $60 business, you don't want to kill that. So you don't want to make that experience free. Keep that experience separate. Grand Theft Auto. Imagine GTA Online if it was free to play.
It sold 150 million, I think.
Right, but there's still another 800 million who would play it free to play. They would make more money if they would make it free to play, and they're going to. They understand. That's why I said Overwatch goes free to play. That's going to happen too.
Do you expect it to happen in GTA 6 or?
No, I think prior to GTA 6 launching, GTA Online will be free to play, not GTA 5. You won't be able to do the 200 missions in GTA 5. You'll still have to buy that for $20 if you want to play that. But the GTA Online game will be free for everybody. Just download it and play it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, DICE tried this with Battlefield as well in Battlefield 5. They had a Battle Royale game called Firestorm. Behind, you actually had to pay for the game, $60.
Yeah, didn't work.
Failed miserably. It's a great game. I love that game, but it failed.
Because they're limiting the audience, and that's the same guys who make FIFA, not DICE, but EA. They're just paranoid. And again, in fairness, Activision was paranoid too until it worked. So, you know, I actually hope that EA looks at what Activision did and then emulates it. I think if everybody comes up with a free-to-play version of their biggest games, you will bring in a bigger audience. You just will.
But I expect that kind of mostly applies for multiplayer games, not single-player games.
Yeah, you can't give away you give away Pokemon Go. I don't know. I'm not sure. If the single-player game is enough different that think of it more like movies and a TV show. You know, if you watch WandaVision, it doesn't make you less likely to watch The Avengers, right? It makes you more interested because you like, honestly, I have to say, I didn't know the Wanda character, and I've seen the Avengers movies. I did not know that girl's name was Wanda. Like, did not know that. I forgot her name is something else on the show, but I recognized her late, you know, after six episodes, and I didn't know she was the sister of the Olsen twins. Did you know that? The girl in WandaVision, you know, Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen, that she's their younger sister.
Okay.
I know. So here they got me really interested in her, in the character, in the show. I haven't watched The Falcon and Winter Soldier yet. We're just waiting for it all to be over. But same thing. It's like they're minor characters in the Marvel universe, but they, you know, I just rewatched Captain America Winter Soldier, which was really good, and the Winter Soldier's in it. But you know, I think it drives interest in the brand. So I think free to play is smart if it drives interest in the brand, doesn't kill the brand.
Cool. So you obviously care about stocks. You know a lot about stocks. You mentioned GameStop earlier. What's your take on GameStop right now?
The original guy, I think his name is Keith Gill, who wrote the original post on the GameStop short squeeze, was brilliant and spot on. He absolutely nailed it. And he identified a mismatch in the market where every time a share of stock trades hands, somebody thinks it's going up, but somebody thinks it's going down. And the mismatch he identified was there were a lot more people who thought GameStop was going down than going up. And so he pointed that out, and he was spot on, perfect, and said, if we can drive a little bit of demand to make the stock go up, and he was talking to go from single digits, you know, 5 or 8 or something, to 30, not 300. But if we can drive a little bit of demand, then the guys who are short the stock will have to cover. And so that's a complicated term. Short just means you are a seller of the stock, but you don't own the shares. So you borrow the stock to sell it. And the only way you make money is if you buy the stock back to repay the person who lent it to you. So if the stock goes up, you have to buy it and you lose money. He said, we can drive the shares up a lot, because he identified a structural defect in how GameStop was owned. Brilliant. And it worked. What made it even more brilliant, and I don't think he possibly could have forecast this, is that it kept happening again and again. So if investors hated GameStop, you know, at 20, they hated it more at 30, and they hated even more at 50 and 100 and 150. So the shorts kept coming back and shorting the stock and shorting the stock and shorting the stock, and it keeps working. So I am kind of amazed that Albert Einstein famously said that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and hoping for a different result. I'm amazed that the shorts keep going back to GameStop, because they do. But Keith Gill and his Reddit companions on Wall Street Bets are absolutely right. As long as that happens, they're going to make money. So the stock is staying up in the 160 range. Just today, they announced that GameStop CEO was leaving by no later than the end of July, and they're doing a search for a successor. 1 week ago today, he sold 600,000 shares at 140. Stock's at 167 right now. He's got 1.7 million shares left. So in good round numbers, that's about 400 million for him. God bless him. But when he went to work there, they gave him $11 million worth of stock. And I think in his dreams, he was going to double that in 5 years and make $20 million in 5 years, which is a ton of money. And if he doubled the shares, he deserved it. But instead, he's getting $400 million after 2 years. So God bless him, but that's just crazy. And so, you know, what do I think about GameStop? I think that eventually the shorts will move away from the stock, and eventually it'll return back to earth. The guys who have taken over the company and gotten rid of all the executives ran a pet food business, and the pet food business they ran, Chewy, is a great business and super smart, and God bless them. But, I have two big dogs, who I'm going to feed in 10 minutes. I go through 30 pounds of dog food a week. So I'm back in the market for dog food every week. Now, you know, I buy 2 months supply at a time, but I buy, you know, 50 bags of dog food a year, and leashes and collars and treats and pet medicine and poop bags and beds and whatever. So Chewy has to, you know, they can sell that stuff to me. Last time I checked, you can't download dog food. So the Chewy guys are going from an all physical merchandise business into a primarily digital merchandise business at GameStop. And they think they're going to copy the same model. and I am skeptical. I don't know how they're going to do it. So God bless them. Now, maybe they'll come up with product tie-ins and they'll sell us, you know, more podcasting microphones and headsets. And, you know, I've been joking about this because it's hard legally to pull it off, but maybe game trading credits to purchase, you know, marijuana. Like, that would be great if you can buy cannabis with your trading credits. You can't in the U.S., unfortunately. But you know, things like that, I think, would be smart. And maybe they can do Taco Bell and Red Bull tie-ins. And if you buy a game from them, you get, you know, a discount on Red Bull or Taco Bell. And those are the things that gamers consume. So I could see it, you know, in the short term, maybe boosting profits. I have a $29 price target. So I don't see how he's going to boost profits by 500% to get to justify $150. It's at $167 right now. But we'll see, you know, maybe he's got some plans. And in fairness, if I had heard from Ryan Cohen back in the day that he was going to compete with Walmart and with Petco and come up with a pet supply online business, I would have said, that's really stupid because Amazon could do that, but they didn't. So, you know, he did build something that I wouldn't have imagined could be done. So GameStop may turn into something. I just am, I'm cynical, skeptical.
Well, physical game sales seem to be going down year after year.
There.
So is there even a future for like physical game stores in on that scale?
Well, there's a future for physical game sales. The actual retail locations, I'm not sure are that important. But unlike other forms of entertainment, games have trade-in value. So, you know, back in the day, I had something like 5,000 LP records, and I still have something like 5,000 CDs. I actually lent my records to somebody, and he sold all of them for like $500, you know, just to make room in his house. And I didn't care. I don't think my 5,000 CDs are worth more than $500. You know, so you don't think about the value there because, again, if you subscribe to Spotify, you've got everything, but maybe, you know, maybe 10% of them. Where games have real value. The trade-in of a game is, you know, a new game is worth at least $20 and typically 30 or 40. And even a one-year-old game is typically worth, you know, 10 to 20. So they have enough value. And the because of GameStop, gamers have been trained that the game has lasting value. So when a gamer purchases a physical copy of a game, they see a $20 bill taped onto the case. Like it's worth $20. And I think that's not going away as long as there are gamers who want to trade it in. Whether you need to purchase those at retail or not is an open question. But, you know, it's hard to trade a game in over the internet because the purchaser doesn't know if it's working or not. And so this really happened to me. My wife broke her iPad, it just cracked the screen, and it worked fine. But I decided, you know, rather than have to deal with a crack in the screen, I just buy her a new iPad. So I went to Apple online and during COVID, and I bought a new one. And they said, do you have an old one to trade it? Yes. Is there any defect, please describe? And I wrote hairline crack on the screen. And so I disclosed it. Do all the buttons work? Does everything work? Does the touchscreen work? Yes, 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 yes. Okay, we'll give you $300. So I got my new one. They gave me a box. I mailed them the old one. And about a week later, they emailed me. Your device had a crack in the screen, so we're only giving you $100. And I thought, well, okay. And if they had told me that up front, I still would have traded it in. It's not a big deal. But the bait and switch. Now, again, I disclosed it, but I typed it into a freeform area, and I'm dealing with a bot, and they didn't read it, and I understand. But that's trading in GameStop over the internet. You think your game is worth 20, that we'll give you 20, and then they send back to you, oh, sorry, 6. That would really anger people. Yep. Where if you go into a GameStop and hand them the game, they actually have a disc reader right there, and they will give you the credit on the spot, and it's done, the transaction is concluded. So I think consumers value that retail presence. Can they survive with fewer retail stores? Of course. You know, can they drop by 2/3? Yes. Can Ryan Cohen come up with a strategy where their online sales stay the same as their physical? Probably. So can he improve profits? Yeah, I think he can, just not to the tune of $150 a share, but maybe. I could be wrong.
You have to feed your dog soon. I could talk about this with you for hours and hours and hours and hours. But there's one last question though, because we have one question we ask everyone who's on our show, because we always have gamers on our show. What's your top three favorite games of all time?
Wow. I mean, they're pretty lame, but my favorite game of all time is Fallout 3. Yeah. My second favorite game of all time, you're going to laugh at me, is Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3.
I love that game.
I did too. I played that game more than anything. And then the third one, I used to say Max Payne 1, but honestly, it's probably NHL on the Sega Dreamcast. So 1996 or whatever, just because it was so stunning and I played the hell out of it. But God, there's a lot. I mean, there's a million games that I really like. But Fallout 3 is my favorite game of all time. And Tony Hawk.
Yeah, I knew that one.
I played Tony Hawk for, 5 years. I mean, I just love that game. It was better. And funny thing is, you know, you go back and look at it now, and there's like the cars aren't even moving, you know, like it's like barely anything on the street except Tony Hawk. But the graphics are so different now. I mean, I honestly played like 1,000 games. You know, again, I guess I'm rating this based on replayability, you know, as opposed to just like the wow factor, because so many games I've played that just like they blew me away. Like I really liked Mass Effect 1. And there's so many games that I just really love them. And even like some of the stupid games, I liked Little Big Planet.
Yeah.
You know, but again, there wasn't that much to do, but replayability wise, I played the hell out of that game because my kids liked it and it was really fun to play with them. I mean, it'd be hard for me to even come up with a top 10. Anyway, Fallout 3 for sure.
Yeah. Like I knew you would say Fallout.
I love that game. That game was so fun.
It's a great game.
I played Fallout 4 maybe a third as much because again, it felt the same. It didn't really do that much. What's that?
Outer Worlds. I've tried it.
I've never played it. I should. I will one of these days.
It's pretty good, actually.
I'll bet. Well, that's not the same guys. It's the Obsidian guys who did Fallout New Vegas. I played Fallout New Vegas.
It's also like the entire Fallout series is a great. Probably not 76. It's kind of rough.
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't hate it, but I just didn't get into it. I played it for a little bit and it just wasn't. Yeah. I honestly, I'm a single player game person. I don't really like playing and having to depend on other people on console games they bother me. I don't, again, Portal be a top five. Absolutely. Portal 1 and 2. Portal 2, 10 year anniversary is yesterday. But Portal 1 and 2, oh my God. I mean, I finished everything in those games and I found a flaw. I want to say Portal 2. There was one thing in the Valve write up that talked about the minimum number of whatever you call it when you make when you shoot a hole in the wall, the minimum number of portals that you had to do. And I can't remember the number or which level, but it said that you could do it in 9, and I kept doing it in 10. And I probably played the level 40 or 50 times. And then I realized that the minimum number, if I did it in even, it couldn't be odd because you had to go and come back. And I actually finally realized they did that as a goof. They did it to screw around with us. But I played a level like 50 times trying to get time. But I did every level in that game in the minimum number of portals, except that one. So that was fun. I love that game. Actually, Portal 2 is the one you had to shoot yourself through the and whatever the hell the name of the company was. I love that game. So Portal 1 and 2. God, so many games.
There's too many.
But again, single player. Yeah. Single player. I'm a single player guy because I like to go slow and do everything. And I have a sense of accomplishment, you know, I don't need to win every trophy, but I really like doing all the interesting collectible stuff. And I remember in Fallout 4, I collected like 10 or 15,000 rounds of some kind of ammunition. And when I got to the end of the game, I didn't even have a weapon that shot it. Like, I don't know what the weapon was that used like 50 caliber. I don't even know what it was, but I had a whole lot of ammunition just in case, you know? So pretty funny.
Awesome. Well, it's been absolutely amazing talking to you. It's kind of unbelievable to me, at least to some extent. So, well, thank you for coming on the show. Is there anything you would like to leave us with? Some kind of words of wisdom from the Pactor?
Oh, you know, get vaccinated. That's my my strongest recommendation. Get vaccinated and maybe still wear a mask when you fly because the flu might get worse going forward. Yep. But yeah, I'm looking for. I'm certain I will be back in Norway within the next 12 months. So,
How far north are you? North of the Arctic Circle.
Oh, you're way north. Okay. Yeah, north. We go to Oslo. We don't go any further. We only go to Oslo.
You should definitely come here. It's pretty. If you like nature, this is the place to be.
Well, I bet. Yeah, I bet. That's pretty far up, though.
It is, but there, like you can get it from Oslo, no problem.
I'm sure. I just need to book an extra day away from home. Probably not. Okay, I'll let you know when I'm at the Burger King in Oslo, and I'll buy you a $20 Big Mac.
Well, if you're ever in Oslo, I'm gonna come down there and meet you. So
there you go. Yeah. Okay, it'll happen. I'll let you know. I promise. Okay.
Yeah, I'll keep you to that.
I'll do it. Yep. Okay.
Yep. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on, and it's have my pleasure. Great day.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.